The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
CNN can now officially project that Donald Trump has eclipsed the delegate threshold to officially clinch the Republican nomination for President of the United States.
Hello, everyone. It's your favorite president speaking to you on a really great day of victory. 1 week ago, we had something called Super Tuesday, and it was indeed super because we won at numbers that nobody has ever seen before, records in virtually every state. And tonight, likewise. But this one got us over the top. The Republican National Committee has just declared us the official nominee. And so we're the official nominee of the Republican Party, which is a big deal. But most importantly, we now have to go on to victory because our country's in serious trouble. We have millions and millions of people flowing in. We have no respect on the world stage. What we say doesn't mean a thing anymore. And to have that happen is unthinkable.
Yep, we're living through the unthinkable. I think Sundance put it best, commenting on Donald Trump sealing up the nomination. He said, giddy up, the fight against the communists is officially designated. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. You can get to the live video stream at TrumpetDaily.com or at the Rumble channel, Rumble.com/TrumpetDaily. It comes to you live every weekday morning at 11:05 a.m. here in the Central Time Zone of the United States. Lots and lots to get to on today's show. We got the Her testimony that was yesterday. We've got a pretty good montage that I think sums that up nicely. You've got the Fannie Willis case in Georgia. It's breaking down. The judge just threw out six of those counts. You've got the Boxes case in Florida. That's basically ground to a halt. And much more to get into on today's show. We've got all the clips as well, so do enjoy your time with us. He mentioned there in the cold open, the president mentioned Super Tuesday, where he just crushed it last week. That was a week ago. This is what CNN said coming away from Trump's victory a week ago. Clip two.
He is flipping states at this particular point, and we would expect it, like Georgia that Joe Biden won, mm-hmm. Nevada that Joe Biden won, Arizona state Joe Biden won, toss-up. Same in Wisconsin, the upper Midwest, same with Pennsylvania and Michigan, where we obviously held that primary last week at this particular point, leaning Republican. So, folks, if you have it in your mind that Donald Trump is just popular enough to win the Republican nomination, lose that thought, because at this particular point, when matched up against Joe Biden, Donald Trump is a favorite, which is something we couldn't say at any point in 2020 and really wasn't something that we could say at any point in 2016 when he was matched up against Hillary Clinton.
Now he's the favorite even against Biden and the general. It was not that long ago when Morning Meltdown and others told us that, he might get the nomination, but he can't win the general. He's just so unpopular. Remember that? Remember that narrative? Now you get a little bit of truth telling coming from CNN with respect to the primary. I mentioned Sundance. He said none of the contests were even close. None of them were close. Haley won D.C. and what was it? New Hampshire? That's it. Everything else. I mean, it was Trump by 30, 40 points. None of the contests were even close, which further highlights just how ridiculous it was for the professional financial apparatus to spend so much money trying to boost an alternative candidate against the overwhelming intent of the Republican base. It shows just how out of touch the ruling class is, even on the Republican side, the establishment. They spent hundreds of millions of dollars to try to prevent this from happening. And in every single race, Trump was the overwhelming favorite. And now, I mean, you've got Ronna McDaniel has stepped down. There's new leadership at the RNC, including Donald Trump's daughter-in-law. They came in, I think it was Monday, they announced that they fired something like 60 people at the RNC. I mean, he's putting Trump into the RNC. Should have happened a long time ago, but all these forces were arrayed against him, including the RNC. You know, the Mitt Romney's niece was heading it up. All of these billionaire donors. And now look at just how overwhelming not only the victories have been, but Donald Trump's takeover of the party, basically. This morning it was announced that Christina Bob, she I guess has a pretty big position now at the RNC. She's a believer that the election in 2020 was stolen. And so that right there, to have somebody like that put into a prominent position at the RNC, you guessed it. I mean, the heads at Morning Meltdown are exploding all over the place. This is clip six.
At the Republican National Committee, for example, now completely taken over by Donald Trump and his campaign, now reshaping its leadership with a lawyer who was at the forefront of all the lies about the 2020 election. Former Trump attorney and One America News Network reporter, Christina Bob, has been hired as the RNC's, ready for this? Senior counsel for election integrity. She, for example, was in that Trump command center at the Willard Hotel on the eve of January 6th, cooking up this plan with Rudy Giuliani and Steve Bannon and everybody else to effectively plot a coup against the United States government. And
I mean, she is one of the, you know, fundamental characters in the plot to overturn the 2020 election, just like House Speaker Mike Johnson.
The utter shamelessness. In fact, this is almost trolling to have Christina Bob, one of the central figures of the conspiracies about the 2020 election, named Officer of Election Integrity at the RNC, which, by the way, is now run by Donald Trump's daughter-in-law.
But I'm getting increasingly weary of people who scratch their heads and say, how did we get here? We know how we got here. We have one man who for at least 16, perhaps 20 years, has been out there on the public stump, increasingly getting more publicity, preaching a combination of anger, fear, and lies, a toxic combination that inflames the culture around him. And he has done it successfully. And it's no wonder that every poll that's ever taken, asking if the country is on the right track or a wrong track always wins because of the poison he has injected into the political culture and into the social culture of this country.
Yes, again, to the point that we were talking just yesterday about John Kelly talking about Donald Trump's affinity, obsession, wanting to be like, wanting to emulate Adolf Hitler.
There's a fresh hot take. He wants to emulate Adolf Hitler, so says the Morning Meltdown. They're fuming over the fact that Donald Trump is, in fact, reshaping the leadership in the Republican Party. And you can see why it needs new leadership. I mean, look at this rhino, Ken Buck. I think he represents a district in Colorado. He announces, yes, sir. He sees the handwriting on the wall, so he's not going to run for reelection for his House seat. He announces this week that he's going to step down next week and leave the seat, a Republican seat, vacant. The slim majority just got a little bit slimmer. I mean, it's as if these rhinos want to just hand power over to the radical Democrats, the communists that are trying to take over the country. Where is their backbone? Where is their willingness to fight for the Constitution? To fight for law and order, to fight for border security, to fight for the economy. They just, I forget if it's through the House or the Senate, but they settled in. The Biden people settled in on a $7 trillion budget over the next fiscal year. Seven trillion. Trillion with a T. The spending and the printing of money just continues without any restraint whatsoever. America under attack, right? Call our operators and request your free copy. if you don't have one. The 800 number, 1-866-930-3024. A lot is being exposed, as I brought to you on yesterday's program, that Cassidy Hutchinson fairy tale, the clavicles lady, that's been exposed as a lie. And now we know that Donald Trump did, in fact, offer National Guard support on January 6th, which would have undermined this whole Trump is leading the insurrection movement. Trump said, hey, Bowser, whoever else, you've got the National Guard. We'll keep things safe. It's going to be a massive protest. And it was. Jonathan Turley writes, one of the longstanding unanswered questions from the January 6th riot has been why the Capitol was so poorly prepared and defended on that day. It's because that's what Nancy Pelosi and company wanted. They didn't want law enforcement around. They wanted there to just be a few Capitol Hill police officers, and they were really hoping that they'd get beat up with fire extinguishers. It was all part of the setup. It was all intended to cover up the steal. It says here, the committee found no evidence that the Trump administration called for 10,000 National Guard members. That's the January 6th committee, which was a fraud from the beginning. Here's more evidence that Liz Cheney and company covered up. Liz Cheney and Cassidy Hutchinson, what do they have to do to bring charges against them? It's kind of like this Robert Hur testimony yesterday. Matt Gaetz asked him, saying, look, he obstructed here. He lied here. This guy lied over there. Does anyone get prosecuted? I mean, what is going on here? They're going after Trump, Donald Trump, for crimes they're committing. It says the Post, Glenn Kessler, admitted that Trump raised the issue, but noted that he might have been suggesting the troops, not because he wanted to protect the Capitol, but to suggest that he and his supporters were being threatened. So they've carefully constructed this false narrative that Trump didn't want any extra law enforcement around. It's his fault. He wanted to overthrow the government. Turley says, however, the issue is not whether Trump issued an order, but made an offer that was declined. For those of us who were covering the event on that day, the question was always, it's always been prominent in our minds. I was critical of Trump's speech while he was still giving it. However, before the Capitol was breached, I also noted that I had never seen the Capitol so thinly protected in a major protest. So thinly protected. No National Guard, not much in the way of law enforcement. It's the way Pelosi wanted it. And here Trump made an offer. He offered to send in troops, to send in the National Guard. We now know that. But where are you going to get justice in this two-tiered system that we see in place? That was fully exposed yesterday. How frustrating it is to see Robert Hur seems like a smart guy. He seems like he's somewhat conservative. But here again, you know, you want to walk the fine line. You want to issue all of these statements with qualifiers. You want to protect yourself. You can't just come out and say, hey, under no circumstances, whether he has a bad memory or not, can Biden just steal documents, give them over to a ghostwriter, tuck them in his garage, pour the paper. I think the paper, the classified documents, they went across three states. They were at six or seven locations. And yet her to justify not indicting Joe Biden or anyone connected to Biden, he says, well, the man's senile. And we couldn't get a 12-member jury to convict anyway. So why bother? Here's a summary of all that transpired yesterday, clip 7.
The evidence and the president himself put his memory squarely at issue. We interviewed the president and asked him about his recorded statement. Quote, I just found all the classified stuff downstairs, end quote. He told us that he didn't remember saying that to his ghostwriter. He also said he didn't remember finding any classified material in his home after his vice presidency. And he didn't remember anything about how classified documents about Afghanistan made their way into his garage. My assessment in the report about the relevance of the president's memory was necessary and accurate and fair. I need to address something that you said in your prior question. What you are suggesting is that I needed to provide a different version of my report that would be fit for public release. That is nowhere in the rules. I was to prepare a confidential report that was comprehensive and thorough of an
explanation. What is in the rules, Mr. Herr, what is in the rules is you don't gratuitously do things to prejudice the subject of an investigation when you're declining to prosecute. You don't gratuitously add language that you know will be useful in a political campaign.
Congressman, what you are suggesting is that I shape, sanitize, omit portions of my reasoning and explanation to the Attorney General for political reasons.
No, I suggest that you not shape your report for political reasons, which is what you did.
That did not happen, Congressman. That did not happen.
You want to be perceived, understandably, as credible, and so I want to first see if you will pledge to not accept an appointment from Donald Trump if he is elected again as president.
Congressman, I'm not here to testify
about
what will happen in the
considering
future.
Considering what I just laid out.
I'm here to talk about the report and the work that went into it.
But you don't want to be associated with that guy again, do you?
I believe, as is his habit, that President Biden probably committed a verbal slip or two during the interview. And I'm not sure any of that matters, because when the interview was over, Mr. Herr completely exonerated President Biden.
So this lengthy, expensive, and independent investigation resulted in a complete exoneration of President Joe Biden.
We analyzed. I need to go back and make sure that I take note of the word that you used, exoneration. That
Mr.
is not a word
Herr,
that appears
I'm going to continue with my questions.
That's not part of my task as
I'm going to continue with my questions. I know that,
that
the term
I ultimately reached related
I know that
to whether
the term,
sufficient evidence existed such that the likely
you
outcome
you exonerated
a conviction.
Him. I know that
I did
the
not
term willful
that word
retention
does not appear in the report,
has a Mr. Herr, it's my time.
Based on the facts and anticipation of defenses presented in your report, could a reasonable juror have voted to convict?
Some reasonable jurors may have reached the inferences that the government would present in its case in chief.
So a reasonable juror could have voted to convict based on the facts that you presented?
Correct.
And did the White House then, once they got the report before it went public, did the White House try to weigh in with your investigation on elements of that report and, frankly, get the report changed?
They did request certain edits and changes to the draft report.
February 8th, the White House. Question, Mr. President, why did you share classified information with your ghostwriter? The President, I did not share classified information. I did not share it. I guarantee I did not. That's not true, is it, Mr. Herr?
That is inconsistent with the findings based on the evidence in my report.
Yes, it's a lie, is just what regular people would say, right? Yeah, all right. So the next one. And all the stuff that was in my home was in filing cabinets that were either locked or able to be locked. That wasn't true either, was it?
That was inconsistent with the findings of our investigation.
Another lie, people might say, right?
They can get away with it, though, you see, because they're in the minds of the Democrats. He's been completely exonerated. And then Herr has to come out and say, no, he's not been exonerated, but he hasn't been indicted. So what happened? Nothing. Big, long report full of details and nothing happens. No one's held to account. You can give classified documents to a ghostwriter. You can show them to Hunter's assistant. Why not? And nothing happens. You can spread them out all over the country. Nothing happens unless you're Donald Trump. How does the Boxes case in Florida go forward, given what was revealed yesterday and in Herr's report? How does that even have a leg to stand on? Donald Trump's the only one of the three that have had some pretty high-profile stealing classified documents cases. And with Trump, he's the only one that was a former president. Biden wasn't. Hillary Clinton was not. But as Secretary of State, she's helping herself to all kinds of classified documents and then destroying evidence as well. Listen to this analysis, this comparison between Donald Trump and Joe Biden from Jonathan Turley, clip 5.
Well, I think that overall, the weight of the evidence in favor of charging was substantial. I think it explains why he had to emphasize the president's lack of memory and how he might appeal to a jury, because the evidence was not supportive of the president. I think that what was particularly damning in Herr's testimony is his constant reference to facts where the president acknowledged he knew he had classified evidence. That he did the same conduct going back 40 years. And it does leave you with this question of why he then gets this level of deference. But I think it leaves the other obvious question, and that is, why is the Department of Justice prosecuting Trump on the classification questions as opposed to the obstruction questions? That's what the Democrats kept on coming back to, but Trump obstructed. Well, yeah. I mean, you can prosecute on obstruction, but how you can reconcile these two cases, in one being prosecuted and the other not, I'm afraid is beyond me. The evidence seems very strong in terms of Joe Biden willfully retaining and, quite frankly, knowing that he did so.
All the evidence is there, but Herr can't really explain why nobody's been charged. Meanwhile, the Boxes case in Florida, I mean, if you just want to go with obstruction, if they would have simplified it, Jack Smith, and just said that, look, we're just looking into it, but Trump's people stonewalled and obstructed along the way. So we're gonna charge him on that. But no, they got to throw the kitchen sink at Donald Trump. And then the court has to bog down in all these details. If you keep it simple, the case has probably already happened by now. And they want to expedite things. You've seen that in the D.C. case. And that's slowing down as well because of the immunity claim from the president. It's going up to the Supreme Court in April, as you know. Listen to Matt Gaetz as he talked about or had this exchange with Herr about just handing over classified documents to a ghostwriter after Biden gets this $8 million advance for a book deal. This is clip four.
So the ghostwriter purposefully deletes this evidence that seems to be like show culpability of Biden's crimes, and you don't charge him. Why did you not charge the ghostwriter with obstructing justice and deleting evidence?
Well, for a number of reasons that are laid out in the report, but in brief, Congressman, yes, when we interviewed the ghostwriter, he did tell us, and I'm trying to get the exact language, that one of the things on his mind, one of the things he was aware of, was that I had been appointed special counsel and was conducting an investigation.
Right, so he didn't, just so everybody knows, the ghostwriter didn't delete the recordings just as a matter of happenstance. Ghostwriter has recordings of Biden making admissions of crimes. He then learns that you've been appointed. He then deletes the information that is the evidence, and you don't charge him.
That is reflected in the report, and one of the reasons...
Like, what does somebody have to do to get charged with obstruction of justice by you? If deleting the evidence of crimes doesn't count, what would meet the standard?
So, Congressman, as we state in the relevant chapter of the report, one of the things that Mr. Zwanitzer did not delete was transcripts of the recordings that he had created that included inculpatory evidence relating to Mr. Biden.
Oh, so if you destroy some evidence but not other evidence, that somehow absolves you of the evidence you destroy?
What does someone have to do to be prosecuted? Gaetz asks, and the answer to that is just be associated with Donald Trump. And they'll come after you. They'll come after Trump. They went after Peter Navarro. He's been ordered to go to prison for a four-month sentence because he didn't go before Liz Cheney's sham committee. This is from Politico. Former Trump White House aide Peter Navarro has been ordered to report to a Miami prison on March 19th to begin serving a four-month sentence for defying a subpoena. You can do that if you're Eric Holder or someone else connected to the dear leader, but not if you're Peter Navarro. Not in response to this committee that was fraudulently put in place by Nancy Pelosi. No Republicans even represented. Completely lopsided in its political orientation. Says here, Navarro, who is urging a federal appeals court to stay the sentence while he attempts to overturn his conviction, faces the prospect of becoming the first top advisor to Donald Trump to serve jail time. And they'd like it to be many, many more, that's for sure. The people, though, the people know. That's why Trump wins the nomination last night. That's why he crushed it on Super Tuesday. This is from Tip Insights. It says, Special Counsel Robert Hur found that President Joe Biden for decades broke laws by hoarding classified records, but refused to bring charges against him. Yet former President Donald Trump faces charges for keeping classified items at his Mar-a-Lago home. This poll asked voters, is this a double standard? And their answer, yes, it is. You see, the people know. The regular people, as Gates said there, the regular people would just call that a lie, right? Not that it's inconsistent with the findings of the report. He lied. He lied about the documents. He lied about giving it to the ghostwriter. It says here, among those who are paying close attention to the story, a clear 57% majority said they either agreed strongly or somewhat with that question. Is this a double standard? Yes, it is, say Americans. Yes, it is. And yet still, even with everything thrown at him, even with all these these billionaire Republican donors trying to get a different candidate, the Trump train just keeps moving. It just keeps going forward. This is that breaking news from earlier this morning. ABC, it says a Fulton County judge on Wednesday quashed a total of 6 counts contained in the election interference indictment against Donald Trump and several of his co-defendants. So this is a judge, McAfee is his name. He's no fan of Trump, but this case is also being exposed for the fraud that it is, run by frauds like Fannie and Nathan. Now we just need the judge to make a ruling on whether or not she should even be removed and disbarred. It says of the 13 counts Trump faced, 3 of them were tossed by the judge. The ruling is a win for Trump and several of his co-defendants who filed to dismiss the counts on the basis that they were legally deficient. It says here, Trump and 18 others pleaded not guilty last August. Well, there you go. All these cases. The lawfare strategy collapsing before our eyes. Donald Trump sealing up the nomination just last night with those victories in Washington State and I forget the other southern state. But he's wrapped it up. It wasn't even close. Sam was saying this morning it was the most boring primary in history. Yeah, Biden doesn't have any competition, so he seals up his end. And then you've got Trump. Gets all the votes that he needs. And we're barely, halfway through the month of March. Even as he's showing up in court, it seems, every other day, opposite a campaign rally somewhere. It's pretty amazing. Circumstances or events going on all around us. I just wanted to play this other exchange. This was a different hearing involving some of the military leadership. And Matt Gaetz he's talking about the breakdown of everything in Haiti. It's being run by a bunch of criminal gangs, by cannibals, and people are fleeing Haiti for Florida. And Gaetz, as it happens, represents Florida. Listen to this revealing exchange with Congressman Gaetz and the military brass. Clip 3.
So what's the difference between Haiti and a failed state? It's telling, right? We can't really identify them because the gangs are in charge. The government has been thrown out. And as a Florida man, I'm deeply concerned about this wave of people that we're about to have, that we are having, coming from Haiti, and it will accelerate because I've gone to Opa-locka and I've spent time with the folks that are engaged in Operation Vigilant Sentry, and they say the number one push factor that drives these Haitians into Broward County, Palm Beach County, where they don't disperse throughout the country, they stay in Southeast Florida. That driving factor is the deterioration of conditions in Haiti. So what are we doing to prepare for that wave and to ensure that these people are not paroled into the United States as the administration has done with people on the southern border, but instead are repatriated back at the dock at Port-au-Prince?
Go ahead. Congressman, we're doing a number of things to ensure that we're keeping track of the situation and we're prepared. At the moment, we have not yet seen large numbers, what we would characterize as a maritime mass migration. But
you
we are alert to that
mass migration, though.
We are alert to that possibility. I think you're right that the driving conditions in Haiti could very well press more people. So we've recently approved some additional assistance that we can provide to the Coast Guard. I think that that has now fully been approved. We'll be providing notifications if we haven't already provide additional shipboard assistance.
Because I've talked to the Coast Guard, and what they say would really support them would be more naval vessels, would be DOD support. And because I think you correctly said that there is an anticipated mass migration here, there are specific legal authorities that we can access that I would implore you to access.
He's talking about Biden sending in the Navy. To push them back, to not just let them, to not let a mass migration situation set in for the people of Florida. And you see it happening. This is the thing. I think Gates came away from that exchange somewhat optimistic that, well, maybe we'll kind of secure the border, but we're not doing that all across the southern border. So now they're going to start coming in on boats. You look at we already know they've brought them in by plane. More than 300,000 immigrants flown in by Joe Obama. So the invasion is coming by air, by land, and now by sea. That's what you can expect. Coming from Haiti, the doors are wide open. And you watch. You watch. If anything, Joe Obama is going to send vessels out there not to repel the advance, to escort the immigrants. Yeah, well, we got to bring them in from Gaza as well. All the poor Palestinian refugees. This was from just a few weeks ago. President Biden on Wednesday issued an executive order instructing federal immigration officials to refrain from deporting most Palestinian immigrants in the U.S., saying the 3-month-long war in the Gaza Strip between Israel and Hamas made it too dangerous. You can't send them back. Just let them in. Let them in from Venezuela. Let them in from Gaza. Let them in from Haiti. Let them in from China. And as we've been saying this week, those nations are not sending their best. In some cases, they're sending hardened criminals. They're sending gang elements. They're sending the crazy and the insane. And it's destroying cities and even Democrat mayors are waking up to this fact, and they're saying it. Essentially, they're saying it. You're destroying our city. It's pretty amazing. One more headline, just because it aligns so closely with what we have in the New Throne of David book. This is from OK Magazine. It says, King Charles is losing control of the monarchy after his cancer diagnosis and Kate Middleton's health crisis. Lots of strange headlines and even developments. The picture that Kate Middleton released, I think it was earlier this week, she's battling some kind of sickness, as well as King Charles. She releases a photo, or her handlers release this photo, and people look at it closely and see that it's doctored somehow or another. What's going on? Well, again, my father in the New Throne of David book, that was material he was speaking about in 2017. I think the book came out the following year. But he talked about the demise of the royal family in 2017. He talked about this. Get our book, The New Throne of David, and read it for yourself. There was another headline the other day. Is Kate Middleton going the way of Meghan Markle? Is she about to bolt from the royal family? This is from Slate. I thought I would do my due diligence and ask some photographer friends what they thought of Kate Middleton's picture. I was sort of hoping they would say, oh yeah, just some routine editing mistakes here, nothing out of the ordinary, and I could put this whole thing to rest. That is not what they said. They pointed out multiple places where the image didn't make sense. Multiple places. Further on, it says, the Royals have made an extraordinarily stupid mistake releasing this picture in that case. Nothing could have been better designed to stoke the flames of people being mental online, all these conspiracy theorists now with their ideas, about Kate Middleton than a clearly edited photograph of her. What is going on with Kate Middleton? And is, just to go back to that previous headline, is King Charles losing control? Again, if you haven't read The New Throne of David, you can get to the book at our website at thetrumpet.com or call our operators and request a free copy. There's no cost, no obligation. We give everything we give away on this program is given away without cost or obligation. You are listening to Stephen Fleury, and he's losing his voice. And we will be right back.
Daily News. Bible prophecy. See the connection on The Trumpet Daily. Are you feeling overwhelmed by the flood of news and information? You need something to sift the news and bring you only what matters most. You need The Trumpet Daily. You also need something to help you understand not just what's happening now, but what will happen next. You need The Trumpet Daily. Only The Trumpet Daily accurately matches daily news to precise Bible prophecies. Because Bible prophecy is the only tool up to the task of sifting the news down to what's important and showing you what will happen next. Join host Stephen Fleury every weekday. Go to trumpetdaily.com.
In our last couple Bible study segments, we've talked about the importance of combining God's love, combining our obedience to God's laws with emotional content. And you, when you look through the Bible, obviously you see Jesus Christ as the best example of this. But when you look through the Bible, there's so many individuals that were just full of personality and that were so quick to show godly emotion. They didn't try to suppress them. They didn't try to bury emotion. Not at all. And as I say, Jesus himself was perhaps the best example. Well, he was. He was praying there. You can look at this in Luke 22. Praying in the Garden of Gethsemane. And he was sweating blood. He was that much into his prayer. I mean, that's remarkable. It would be hard enough for us, any of us, to just sweat a little, you know, normal sweat, I mean. But for blood to come oozing out of your pores. This was a man crying out. What did we read previously? Hebrews 5. Strong crying and tears. And then you look at some of the disciples that Jesus selected. Peter, obviously, he was an emotional being. He was full of life and personality. He was certainly ambitious and gung-ho. There's two that got the tag Sons of Thunder, James and John. I don't think Christ would have nicknamed them Sons of Thunder if they were just really casual about everything and you know, not really filled with godly emotion. Sons of Thunder. Look at John 21 sometime and see what Jesus, or rather Peter, did when he saw Jesus walking on water. He just jumped off the boat and then started walking on water himself. And then when he sunk, Christ, of course, you remember the exchange, Christ said to him, "Why did you doubt? You were doing great." Then he started looking around and he saw the elements and he got a little afraid. And he sunk. There's cases of righteous indignation. There's cases of strong crying and tears and everything in between. Look at this example in John chapter 2. I might have mentioned this at least in passing over the past couple of weeks when we've had these segments. But John 2 and verse 12 says, "And after this, he went down to Capernaum." Speaking of Christ, he and his mother and his brothers and sisters, the disciples, and they continued there for many days. Verse 13 says, and the Jews' Passover was at hand, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. So he goes to Jerusalem. This is early on in John's gospel. It says in verse 14, and he found in the temple those that sold oxen and sheep and doves and changers of money sitting. So here we come to his confrontation, I should say, with these traders, these money changers. They had set up all their shops. And this angered Jesus. Verse 15, it says, and when he had made a scourge, a whip, in other words, of small cords, he drove them all out of the temple, and the sheep, and the oxen, and he poured out the money, the changers' money, and he overthrew the tables. This is not, you know, a skinny, soft-spoken hippie. This was Jesus Christ, the Son of God. It says it's a shame for a man to have long hair. Think about all of the illustrations and the statues you see around the world depicting him as that, basically an effeminate, womanish, skinny man. This paints a different picture, doesn't it, John 2? Of course it does. He puts together these whips, and he starts whipping people and animals, turning over tables, dumping out coins onto the floor. Verse 16, and he said unto them that sold doves, take these things hence, make not my father's house an house of merchandise. So this was his father's house. This is why he was righteously indignant. This was godly emotion. Pure and simple. I mean, Jesus never sinned. This is not sin, what he's doing here. This was defending God's house. This was righteous indignation. And, you know, John wrote this book later than some of the other gospel writers, and I'm sure Jesus had some long discussions, this disciple that he was so close to, some long discussions with John about how much, you know, detail he wanted to put in. Christ didn't say to John, you know what, leave that. I'm a little embarrassed by that incident in the temple. So leave that out of your account. He didn't say that at all. He inspired this to be written. Why? Because God wants us, he wants to see some confrontational, fiery zeal when it's called for, when it's necessary. There's times for diplomacy and tact, obviously. But this is fiery zeal. He was aiming to purify, to clean God's house. Look at how seriously he took his battle against sin. We were talking in doctrines class today about the subject of grace and how that most in the traditional Christian world, they take the doctrine of grace and they turn that into a license to disobey God's laws. You can read about that in Jude 3 and 4. They use it as an excuse to, as one Laodicean minister said one time, a grace covers every sin before and it covers every sin in the future. So what message does that send to someone sitting in the congregation? It doesn't matter what you do. Grace covers all. Grace, if you read some of the scriptures I covered in class today, grace, God's gift, unmerited free pardon, something we don't deserve because we've earned the wages for sin, which is eternal death, Romans 6 and verse 23. And when God extends that gift after repentance and faith, after baptism and the laying on of hands, then what a motivator to go on and to keep God's house in this case, or to keep your house or your life pure and righteous. It's a battle, and we're going to trip up and make mistakes along the way. But the Laodiceans, they just basically threw in the towel and said, we're going the way of this world. God's law is bad. God's grace covers everything. You don't really need to worry about your behavior in any respect. That's not the teaching of the Bible. Look at how seriously he went about this cleansing, this purging of the temple. I mean, here's an example. We're coming up to the spring holidays where we remove leavening from leavening products from our home as a demonstration to God, as a reminder to us of just how serious we've got to be about cleaning up our lives spiritually, de-leavening our lives spiritually. We need God's grace, and it is a tremendous gift. But it's God's grace that motivates us to purify ourselves with God's help, through the power of God. We can't do it on our own. Jesus said this in Matthew 19. But with God, all things are possible. This is verse 17 here in John 2. It says, and his disciples remembered that it was written, the zeal of your house has eaten me up. His disciples, Christ's disciples, remembered Psalm 69. Let's read some of that. David's Psalm, Psalm 69, verse 2. It says, because for your sake I have borne reproach, shame has covered my face. I am become a stranger unto my brethren and an alien unto my mother's children. Verse 9 says, for the zeal of your house has eaten me up, and the reproaches of them that reproached you are fallen upon me. The Revised Standard Version says there, for the start of it, for the zeal of your house has consumed me. The zeal of God's house, it consumed David. I mean, look at his passion, to just take another example, and how earnestly he threw his heart into just making plans for the temple construction. God said he was going to leave the construction to Solomon, David's son. But, I mean, David was zealous. David said, all right, if I can't do the actual constructing, I'll lay plans for it. I'll prepare the way for it. And he did that with some kind of zeal. The zeal for your house has consumed me. Notice what Barnes' commentary has to say about has eaten me up. That's in the King James for verse 9. It says, has absorbed me or engaged my entire attention and affection, has surpassed all other feelings, so that it may be said to be the one great absorbing affection and desire of my mind. Here is an example set for ministers and for all Christians. What an example it is. This was, I mean, it surpassed all other feelings. You think David was trying to suppress his emotions? He was consumed by this house and all that it represented. If you think about even just God's purpose and plan, not just for here on earth, but for the universe, you can read over in Isaiah 9, I'll just read verse 7. It says, of the increase of his government and peace, there shall be no end upon the throne of David and upon his kingdom, to order it and to establish it with judgment and with justice from henceforth, even forever. And then the last sentence there says, the zeal of God, the Lord of hosts, will perform this. The red hot fiery zeal of God is what brings about this purpose for the vast, limitless universe. There's a reason it's all out there. And godly zeal is going to spread God and his way of life, God's law, his way of life, godly emotion all over the universe. That's something that ought to fire us up. You look at this world and how much zeal they have for sin. So much so that even in the world of religion, they'll throw the law right out the window and just say, grace, 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 everything's covered. That's zeal. That's not zeal according to knowledge, as Paul said in Romans 10. And it's important that our zeal, that our godly emotion, that it is channeled, in the direction of God, that it is of God. It's of course, quite possible for godly emotion, or rather just emotional content, to be out of control. We see it all over the place in the world. But with God, you see, there's perfection. And we see these wonderful examples, and God says, that's what I like. I like someone who really is fired up for God's way of life, who really is fired up for doing God's work, who really does strive to combine godly love with the proper level of godly emotion. A few emails that have come in. I guess we can just transition over to them right now. This one from a couple weeks ago. Wow, Mr. Livingston, out of the gate, guns blazing, it says. Thank you for a rousing program today. I see why Stephen Fleury depends on you for detail and depth on each topic. Keep up the great service that you have been given. It is a team effort for sure. We've got quite a few hands involved in this production. Probably not as many as they would have on another show, but we do make good use of a lot of people contributing, coming from at least three nations every day, sometimes more. It says, wow, what an amazing opening ceremony to the King David and King Solomon Discovered exhibit. Thank you. Truly a miracle performed by our great God. The virtual tour of the exhibit is phenomenal, so professional, and everyone who had a part in developing this is truly, truly talented. Thank you to everyone for all that you do in this great work of God. I'm wondering how this exhibit could possibly tie into a formal introduction between your father and Donald Trump. We'll see. We'll see what happens. It's exciting to think about some of the doors that have opened in the past year or so. Another one here says, in my lifelong experience with animals and references to dogs in general, most dogs are gentle, loyal, and loving. When they are mean and aggressive, he's talking about the Biden dogs, Commander. When they are mean and aggressive, you can rest assured that it was more than likely caused by man, with the possible exception of rabies or infections. Some kind of physical disease, of course, could set them off. But I think he brings up a pretty good point there. Another one here says, I loved the introduction for the exhibit and the feedback for Celtic Throne. We must never forget what happened to our brother Judah. I'm so happy that you will be playing recordings from the exhibit. You played some clips from the CPAC. I think that's what it was. Difficult to keep track of all these meetings. And then he goes on to talk a little bit about, I think, a point Steve Bannon made in his recent broadcast. Another one here says, great show as always, listening to Fannie Willis' denials about phone calls. She says they could have been made in the general area, bars, restaurants, etc., not necessarily her place. Another one says, glad to see you so excited on today's show. It's infectious in a good way. I also appreciate the work's recent emphasis on Psalms. As I try to understand them, I can see that my attitude is nowhere near as noble as the psalmist. I think perhaps the best I can hope for today is becoming a man after God's own heart. That's in response to some of the writings that my father's been churning out on the book of Psalms. One last one here, or maybe two. It says, great show, those elites mocking immigration, etc., living inside protected and gated communities, wealthy are not bothered by the high prices for inflation or because of inflation. Another one says, the clown show in the White House continues. The morning meltdown just keeps repeating themselves every day with the same guest who repeat themselves daily. It says they will soon be scattering and jumping ship once their completed lies are realized and America starts calling them out for their lies. So if you'd like to submit some feedback to the show, you can reach us at td@thetrumpet.com. You can also join in on the chat there at the Rumble channel or leave a comment underneath each program. That's at rumble.com/trumpetdaily. You are listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.